Good evening. Radio. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Conversations with ANA. I'm your co-host, Angela. Today is Sunday, January 8th, 2023. Tonight is our first show of the year, so happy New Year's to all our listeners, and welcome again, and thank you for all your support. Tonight we'll be discussing another series of Black men, how are you showing up in the community series? With our special guest, Larry Muhammad, we will be discussing strategies on how he and others can help build the community. Okay, so to speak live on the show, make comments or ask questions to our guests or our hosts, call directly into the show at 515-605-9322. Once again, to speak live on the show, you can reach us at 515-605-9322. Also, those who are listening through their phones or desktops, laptops or iPads and want to speak live with us, you can also call in directly at 515-605-9322. To support the show, you can follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Conversation with AA. Once again, it's with Conversation with AA. If you want to be a guest on the show or have any topics or videos you want us to discuss, you can contact Avon at 347-02813. Once again, the number to the show is 347-460-2813, or you can email your request to conversationwithaa@gmail.com. So once again, tonight's topic is Black man, how are you showing up in the community? Avon, hi Avon, how are you?
Hey Avon, I'm talking to myself, right?
You love yourself so much, you say hi Avon. You give me your shout-out, man.
You know what I'm saying? Woo, woo.
Wow,
that's terrible. That's the best.
I love it.
Hello, Angela. How are you doing? I'm well. Thank you. No, we have a great show this evening, and I'm looking forward to getting to it. But I want everyone to know how we came up with this series. You know, this series came to be because Angela and I became aware of conversations coming from the Manosphere, and that's a movement that happens to have very strong opinions on women. And then as time continued forward, we noticed men's thoughts and movements towards each other was quite concerning. And we have questions that we would like to ask. So instead of speaking for men, we said, would it be better to go directly to the source and ask men themselves? So that's exactly what we decided to do. And that's how this series came to be. Black men, how are you showing up in your community? So tonight, we're going to have a conversation with a great, great guest tonight. You know, and this evening, we'll be speaking with a man that carries the title Father, Youth Development Specialist, and Business Owner. That would be Larry Muhammad. And Larry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, guys. How y'all doing today, this evening?
We are great, thank you. And say greetings and salutations to you, and we are so happy that you decided to join us and to have this conversation because it's much needed in the community. So we are
absolutely
glad that you're here. And, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to speak over you, but I wanted to know, before we get started, so we and our callers that call in, how do you prefer for us to address you?
I mean, to be frank with you, Brother Larry, some people know me as Brother Larry. It really doesn't matter. My position has always been you want people to address you how they're comfortable, because, I mean, you are who you are. So, I mean, ultimately, it's what they're comfortable with, but Brother Larry, it's fine.
Okay. Okay, very good. Well, Brother Larry, what we're going to do is we're going to go back first, and then we're going to bring us up to the present. So our first question for you is, we would like for you to tell us something about yourself and your family growing up.
Oh, okay. So I was born and raised in Harlem, Harlem Hospital, actually. So the funny thing is, Angela and Avon, you know, you meet people, you don't know them, and they'd be like, are you from, you know, Africa, because you're tall and you're dark? And I tell them, no, I was born in Harlem. But I was literally born in Harlem Hospital. So I was born in Harlem Hospital. My parents divorced when I was super younger, my brother and I. So my grandmother raised us out of St. Nicholas Houses in Harlem.
Okay.
And that was rewarding, because my grandmother, you know, she was a church goer, and she demonstrated love by what she did. She didn't say it a lot. So, you know, food every day, discipline. You had to be upstairs before the street lights came on. If you didn't, you know, your friends would be like, Grandma Lottie just went that way with the belt looking for you. So that was rewarding. And the relationship with my mom was always good, because she gave me, when I did visit her, because she lived in the Polo Grounds, she offered the balance of that. So that helped. And my grandfather, you know, being in the house, I watched him get up every morning, 4 o'clock, board ed, went to work, you know, brought his check home. You know, my grandmother gave him his little, you know, gambling, little taste, sippy sip money. But the thing that stood out, Angie and Avon, was that he never raised his voice at my grandmother, never more or less a fight. So, you know, growing up, that always helped me with my relationship with females. I just never could, you know, visualize the concept of getting into a physical exchange. So I like to mention that, because that helped getting older. Youngest of three boys, my brothers got involved heavy in the drug trade, which is, you know, documented in Harlem amongst people in that circle. But what stood out was they never allowed me in that environment. They always shielded me from it. So when my brother was murdered when I was 17, a few years later, I engaged that lifestyle and was fortunate to be motivated to get out. One summer, I wasn't hustling, but I was in that area, and drug enforcement agents came, and one of them said, well, cuff him. You know, so in my mind, I knew I wasn't hustling. I wasn't doing anything. So I'm like, I'm about to go to jail, and I wasn't hustling. You know, so I ran. I got away, and ultimately, that was the last time I hustled. So I was fortunate. A friend of mine who hustled with me, his sister, you know, knew my situation. She said, well, Larry, look, you know, the Marriott is hiring. She said, I know you never worked, you know, but it's worth a shot. But long story short, you know, I went down to Marriott. I didn't have any job experience, so I was blessed to meet a sister who said, Larry, you don't have any experience, but if you can get some character references, I can get you another interview. So, you know, growing up playing sports, the director of the community center, Mr. Knox, the principal at school, and my pastor at church wrote me character references. So I got another interview, a third interview, and ultimately got the job. And that was that's where the turnaround started. You know, and in between that, you know, you have friends being murdered. You have, you know, relatives being murdered. And
hold on to that for a minute there, Larry. Okay, so we can get an understanding. Okay, so you said that you were the youngest of three boys. So what was the age difference between you guys?
The age difference between us is 4 years.
Okay. Because you had mentioned that they had kept you away from, that they tried to steer you away from the game. So I was just wondering, you know, how old were they, and, you know, for them to have this, you know, the mindset to keep you away from that. And that your brothers were older than you. So was there like a younger brother worship that you looked up to them and that you wanted to follow into follow behind them, or something else happened? It was just the environment that caused, you know, you to get involved.
Well, from my perspective, I never entertained the idea of doing it. I'm only guessing. My older brother, that was just his personality. He didn't want to expose me to what he was doing. But I never entertained the idea. A few years after he passed, I ended up getting involved. But, you know, that was just, you know, that was in the moment. But at the time, to answer your question, it wasn't something that I personally was trying to get involved in. And I'm just assuming it was just his desire not to get his younger brother mixed up in it.
Okay. And then you said that you lost your brother to the game. He was murdered. How did that affect you, and what effect did that have on the family as a whole?
Wow, that's a really good question. In terms of the family, my mom took it really hard. It was her oldest son, and he's an August 9th. She's August 16th. I'm August 7th. So she
wow.
took it really hard. Yeah, she took it really hard, and, you know, she even questioned, you know, did he love me when he was here? So, you know, when people die, sort of a lot of emotions come up, but she took it hard. I seen friends of my brother, like literally lose it mentally. For me, to be frank with you, Angie and Avon, what it did was it really showed me what people go through when they lose a loved one. So as I got into the hustling game, it's like that was something I never would really see myself doing, taking someone's life unless it was self-defense. So it did that for me. It taught me the value of not letting yourself get to the point where you have to do that to someone. But to answer your question, yeah, pretty much everyone took it hard.
Wow. So I'm sure, like you said, so that – help dissuade you from going into that lifestyle. So you went into because of the young lady. You said that she got you the first job at the Marriott. So you decided to go that direction to stay far away from that lifestyle. Correct?
What triggered me to get away from it was the incident that summer when drug enforcement agents were going to arrest me, and I was able to get away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell us some more. So I'm sure so that ultimately affected the direction you chose to go. So you had said that you had the Marriott job, and then you had gotten involved in the financial world at some point.
Yeah, the financial part came. What happened a little while after the Marriott was when I was transitioning from the streets to Marriott, because remember, the street situation is what triggered the Marriott. I heard this man speaking. We was running a crack house in Harlem off of Lenox Avenue 130th, and I heard this man talking, and I never was impressed hearing someone's voice, and later it turned out to be Minister Farrakhan. So two things has happened. Not only was I like just personally transitioning away from that lifestyle because I dodged the bullet, I was coming into learning, you know, this teaching and who this person was. So that was on the other side of leaving the streets and a little while later into Marriott. But the Wall Street thing came a little bit after, I think it was at least 7 years later, because I spent 5 years at Marriott. I went into Marriott in 85. I left in 90. I end up working with Nissan Motor Acceptance Corp for a few years before I end up going to Wall Street. I ran into a gentleman I played ball with. He was servicing his car in Nissan. And I guess he assumed that, being I worked in sales with Nissan, I would be a good broker. So he's like, bro, you know, call me, yada, yada. You know, people always telling you, you know, oh, I'm doing this. So for months, I didn't call him. And then ultimately, I called him, and he, you know, he picked me up. He took me to the firm he was working at. And when I noticed Nike and IBM was in the same building, I'm like, okay, maybe this is serious. So I went into a training program where I had to literally call people I didn't know on the phone. They would hang up on me, you know, don't call me. It's called being a cold caller. So I did that for a year and a half. And then the firm sponsored me for the Series 7, which is at the time I studied for the exam. I failed the first time because I was frolicking, being a bozo. I studied again, and I ended up passing.
That's Series 7. I remember taking that. Well, I'm not a good test taker anyway, but that's Series 7. What year did you take it? Sorry, everyone.
I took the 7 in 89. I'm sorry. I'm getting my years mixed up. That was Marriott. I'm in 99.
Oh, okay. I was like, Jesus. Okay, 99. Okay, right. Mm-hmm.
So what is the Series 7? For those who want to know, tell us about the Series 7, you two. What's that about? What is that?
Well, the Series 7, Angie made a good point. It's the third hardest exam in the nation behind the CPA, which is a three-day exam, and then the bar exam. So it's a really tough exam, guys, because it's so much information, but the trick is you got to study consistently but in not too long of a time, because you'll lose what you studied early and retain what you studied late. So it's kind of tricky. What helped me was the firm put me in a class with a gentleman, Tony DeCicco, and he had a 96% pass rate. So he knew how to concretize the study course and, you know, the timeline and how to do the practice exams. And that's what really helped. But it's a financial exam where you have to take it in order to legally call customers and recommend any type of security, whether it be a stock, a bond, a 401k, a mutual fund, or an option, which is, it's a derivative of a stock. It's like you're betting that a stock is going to go down. So to sum it up, that's what the Series 7 is about.
Wow. That sounds serious. It does sound serious. Wow. So you said you passed that. And so then from there, what happened? You became a stockbroker? You did become a stockbroker.
I did become a licensed broker. Prior to that, you're a trainee where you can call customers on behalf of your broker, but you can't literally recommend a stock to them. That's illegal. It's called violating the NASDAQ fiduciary responsibility code. So I became a broker, and now I'm able to call customers and start my own what we call trading book. But the ironic thing, guys, is 9/11 hit. That was 2002. So 9/11 hit, and the market crashed. So I was licensed for maybe, what was it, about a year and a half before the market crashed. So I stuck it out for a while. And as a broker, a licensed broker, you only get paid when you trade and you do commission trades. Versus when I was a trainee, I got a salary of $225 a week. So ultimately, I had to choose another profession, but the experience and the time I spent as a broker was super rewarding.
Okay. So how does it help you today? Do you see any benefits, or do you apply any of the knowledge that you had from being a broker to other things like your business today, or what you're trying to do now?
Yeah, for me, and I've shared this with a few people, the thing that stands out, guys, is really the habits, because you're doing the firm at 7 a.m., which means you got to get up early, and then you have to pitch the room. So You're in this big boardroom with over 100 brokers, and then you do like a mock call where the senior broker will be like, you know, pitch me, call me like I'm a prospect. You know, so you're nervous. So it teaches you how to communicate, and then it also encourages you to go home and study. But If I had to say the upside, the habits, you know, you're getting up, you're studying, and you're learning how to talk to people because, you know, I was a brother, and the one thing they would tell you, when you get on the phone with these guys, these are multimillionaires, you don't want to have that urban. You know what they were trying to say. You don't want to have that urban sound in you. You know what I mean? So I learned how to articulate my voice in a way where you wouldn't know if I was a brother or not. So
wow.
That really helped. So when I deal with people now with my business, it taught me how to communicate outside of the space that I was accustomed to.
Okay. So and besides that, other than that part, yeah, so they can be used to you. Did you experience any other cons with that? Was there any racism or did people come at you? Or did you know, was there a certain type of attitude that was going on when you were there? Because we hear a lot of brothers and people complaining about, you know, working with the man and for the man, and they're having all these different problems. Did you experience anything like that?
You know what, Avon, that's a really good question. To be frank with you, remember the advantage I had when I became a licensed broker, I was already a member of the Nation of Islam.
Oh,
and the one thing I try to say to our people, you know, we know racism is real, but the one thing I learned about Caucasians on Wall Street, when they see that you're not, you know, what the stereotype is, it sort of keeps them at bay. They don't do the, you know, the crazy jokes. It's certain things they don't do. So although it's there, it's almost like they avoid it with you because they're not really too sure how it's going to go.
Okay. I see.
But it's definitely there. It's there. It's there without a doubt.
Okay. So when you said, so you are a member of the Nation of Islam. So would you care to expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. I mentioned it earlier. Remember when I was transitioning from the streets to Marriott, I had heard the minister's voice coming out of, I didn't know where it was coming. I knew it was coming out of a window. You know how people play their music loud and out the window?
Oh, yes. I know it well.
Well, they was playing his DVD, or well, I guess, or whatever it was. I'm assuming a DVD. And that's what sort of triggered me, and I end up finding the mosque. I don't even remember how I found it. I end up finding the mosque, and end up becoming a registered member in February of 1990. So I've been a registered member since 1990.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So yeah, back then I remember listening as well. So it was most likely on a tape. You probably heard it on the tape.
probably the little cassette tape, right?
Yep. That's what I remember hearing and listening on. Yes, indeed. So what would you say the discipline of the nation, because you heard him and you were influenced by him, so apparently that drew you into the nation. So what are the disciplines that you go by and that you see that can help us with the problem that we have going on in society now with the brothers and how there's not just the brothers, but, you know, how families are falling apart and how we're moving in the streets, you know, how people are looking at us. What would you say to that? What would you have to say about that?
That's a good question. What helped me? I think I mentioned it earlier. You know, my grandmother was a disciplinarian. Like my grandmother Angie and Avon, she would wake you up if you left one fork in the sink. She would wake you up at 4 a.m. So when I got in the nation, I was so accustomed to her discipline. Like she would purposely vacuum in the same spot to wake you up on a Saturday if you didn't get up, because, you know, Saturday was her cleaning day. So she would purposely vacuum. I mean, it was staunch discipline with her. So I say that to say it starts with us as parents being better examples to our children. See, because my grandmother was an example of not just discipline, but love. So I mentioned it earlier. She didn't always say it, but she did all the things that showed me that she loved us. And unfortunately, you know, we have many of us as parents where we're asking our children to do one thing, and we're doing something different. And, of course, you have parents that are trying, and they're fighting against, you know, social media, et cetera. But to answer your question, it starts at home. Father not being there is an issue, but we can't use that as an excuse. Because if a woman doesn't have a father at home, it's her responsibility to put her son in environments that's going to help him be disciplined. And I want to say this because it's important to me. It's on my heart. So many black women keep their sons away from the Nation of Islam, and frankly, it's hurting them. Because you don't have to join. It's just a matter of getting the information and the discipline. So to answer your question, for me, not only the discipline, but it's taught me how to love myself more. So it was harder for me to see another brother or another sister and just, you know how we are, just recalcitrant, nothing positive to say, nothing negative to say. So the Nation teaches love of self outside of, you know, the misconception of it's, you know, it's religious. It teaches the fundamental of loving self. And as black people, that's what's hurting us. We don't have a healthy love and respect for ourselves.
We don't. And then you're saying that through the mosque, going to being part of this organization, they teach you how to have this self-love, or this is something that morph within you?
No, well,
so how does it look like? So that's where we're stuck, and a lot of people get stuck. Okay, they say, all right, you're saying this, okay, we need to do this and this, whatever. How does that look? How does that show up? How would you describe it? What are the steps that you would say to help get us there?
Well, I think it starts with recognizing the reality of God in our lives and having the knowledge of God. Because in that, you know, we always hear God is love. So once we yield to the knowledge of God, then now we're in a position to where we're going to yield to the knowledge of ourselves. And then the third level is the knowledge of our natural enemy. And not that we want to blame them, but it helps us to recognize the things and the sources that prevent us from loving ourselves. So to answer your question, it starts with recognizing God and yielding to his will versus us being self-will. You know, and his wisdom. You know, you read his wisdom, you can't help but fall in love with yourself because it speaks of us. Ye are all gods, children of the Most High God. You know, be ye not sayers of the word and doers of the word. How can you say you love God who you've never seen and hate your brother who you see every day? So to answer your question, just yielding to the word develops the love. But, you know, we're feeding off of everything but the word. So it's hard for us to come into the love. But to answer your question on another level, in the men's class, you know, we learn levels of training in terms of, you know, etiquette. You know, self-defense, the value of our woman, the importance of respecting and protecting our woman, the importance of, you know, providing for our children, you know, the importance of trying to be, you know, value adders in our community. So to give you a better look at how that looks on the inside, that class every week teaches us different levels of manhood training that help us to grow into love for ourselves.
Wow, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. There's so many questions to ask. Angela, do you have any questions that you
Hi, Larry. Yes, I do. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Angie, I saw you today. You had on all black, right?
Oh, you was there. I text you. I really text you. I text you back.
You had on all black. You had your head covered. I was like, that's Angie. But I know we had planned on you texting when you were heading over. So I'm like, maybe she's here and she's not. But then when I saw you, I'm like, great, she's here. You were closer to the back, right?
Right. I was closer to the back. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I saw you.
Right. Because I was wondering, maybe he's not part of this mod. Maybe he's not part of mod.
I didn't want to scream your name out loud in front of everybody. I was on the left side of you.
Oh, okay. Okay. For those, I just want to just repeat. Once again, the show, for those who's just coming in or who's listening to the show on Instagram, Twitter, or any other social media, tonight's show is Black Man, How Are You Showing Up in the Community? And we have our special guest, Larry Muhammad. Yeah, Larry, I was there, and I just want to just get the audience up to date what we're talking about. I was there, Nori Muhammad, right? It was you or one of your guys that invited me to come out. It was you that sent me this?
Yeah, it was me.
Okay. Yeah. So I came out and, it was a very, it was really nice. It was really nice. Okay. And I would definitely want to visit again. Now, I bought a book by Nori Muhammad. Everyone who's, familiar should be familiar with Nori Muhammad. Is he in second command of Farrakhan?
He's close to 30 years in out of Indianapolis. The minister's changed his name maybe about 10 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
So he's one of the regional ministers. So he's the minister, and he has the responsibility of organizing all the mosques in that particular region. So you have that across the nation where you have, in certain regions, you have ministers. Part of their job also is to organize and to create campaigns that is relevant to that particular region. So he's a regional minister as well as a student minister in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. He was very funny, very funny. Yeah. And he broke down a lot of stuff. And I would like to go over a couple of things. And that's only because you are a Muslim and are a member of the Nation of Islam. And I'm sure that this has affected your whole life, right? I mean, from the time you became in the Nation of Islam, right?
Right. You know what's ironic, Angie? My daughter met... And I met him when she was one, before his name changed from Damien to Nori. So for me, it's special to see, his growth. And obviously, he's committed to studying and being a true student of what we're given.
Okay. Now, before we even go into that, because I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure probably Abram got some more. Before we go into that. What is it that you do? What is it that, I know that you're giving a youth event, and I want you to tell the people what you're doing. And ever since I met you and knew you, you always was giving something for the community. Matter of fact, you came out to Harlem Up in Heaven that my uncle give Danny, and I didn't know that you knew us since for a long time ago. He told me. He said, "Well, I knew him for a long time. Now we grew up kind of together. I didn't know that until I spoke to him." So, what are you doing in the community right now?
Well, outside of just in terms of the Nation of Islam, being in for the time I've been in. Being a private soldier has been valuable because it teaches and it gives you an opportunity to really get out there and engage the people, primarily, with the Final Call newspaper. Most people are familiar with the paper. A lot of people, they see the brothers at the paper and be like, nah, I'm good. So that's been rewarding, but then there was another level where I was responsible for, as we would call it, commander of the borough, which is basically organizing the brothers, creating details when we go out and engage the people, and more importantly, door-to-door activity, and just events, Harlem Week, et cetera. But outside of that, I've been really serious about conflict resolution. As you know, Angie, we have a lot of conflicts in our neighborhood with our young brothers. And my experience has been when the right person speak with them, not talk at them, they may not seem like they're listening, but ultimately they listen. Mm-hmm. And it's not always overnight, but they listen. And the thing I've noticed with us as adults, particularly our older brothers, and that's why I was so attracted to the show because of the title. I think I mentioned that. How are you
right.
showing up in the community?
Right.
As older brothers, we always on this younger generation, this, that, and the third. And Nori said it today. This is the generation that came from you. So if they no good, then where'd I come from?
Right.
And Angie, we forget we were 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20.
Right.
And if someone can, release a video of some of the stuff that many of us did, we would be embarrassed.
Right.
So we don't really have the authority to come at them like that. And my approach is totally opposite, where I don't judge them. I'm not talking at them. I try to be an example when they see me, but I'm not afraid to talk to them. And I'm going to share something that happened to me when, not much younger, but a few years ago. I'm on the elevator, Angie, in Manhattanville Projects.
Okay.
And I'm on there with a lady, and then a young brother gets on the elevator, Angie, and he pulls out a big silver 45 handgun.
Wow.
But I mentioned earlier, being in the street with the paper and, people rejecting you, that may not seem valuable, but it's valuable because it teaches you just how to be used to your people. And just instinctively, I was like, bro, you're going to go to jail. I'm like, you got to put that away. The police is staying in this building. So he was like, I don't care. So my thing was, you can do more outside than you can do in contrary. But my point was, this instinctively, I just had to say, bro, like, what part of the game is that?
Right.
And that really sums up what I try to do in the neighborhood, just try to be a voice that not only is being reasonable, but helping brothers to understand a little discipline goes a long way, bro.
Right, right. That's true. And I was going to ask you that. You mentioned before, you mentioned to me how the topic made you reflect. Can you share that thought with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, again, Angie, you and I, the beauty is, we've had an affinity, although we don't see each other all the time. When we do, we always in the right energy. And the bottom line is this. And this is just my opinion. Our older brothers haven't stepped up. The older generation has, overall percentage-wise, we haven't stepped up. And when I say step up, we walk past our younger people, right?
Right.
We're not offering them tangible tools.
Mm-hmm.
We're not offering them an opportunity. We're not even giving them a lead on how to find a job, more or less giving them a job because we're business owners.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read your title, that's a good question that every black man needs to answer. We need to get them on the show, and we need to hear from them. As a matter of fact, we need to do a summit where it's around, it's hosted by you guys. But that's the question to every black man in the audience.
Okay,
How are you showing up in the neighborhood?
Right. You know, we I heard a lot of people, a couple of men have told me that that's kind of, we're out of order being women, asking men how they are showing up. And the question always, like, how are you showing up as a woman? What are you, what would you advise us to say to that?
Well, this is the thing, Angela. Let me share what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan shared. And it's so deep, it's so simple, but it's deep. He said, when someone asks the question, he said, you don't necessarily want to answer the question. He said, you want to answer the motive for the question.
Hmm.
And see, a black man with a double mind and don't want to be responsible, he's going to shift it. Like, you shouldn't be asking questions, but the question to him is, how did you get here?
Hmm.
Got here to a woman.
Right.
You wouldn't even be talking to me if your mama didn't give birth to you. So how dare you ask, say, tell a black woman she don't reserve the right to ask that question when she's raising children that you abandoned by herself?
Hmm.
So we got to stop letting people trick us by shifting the narrative and answer the motive to the question instead of asking the question. So he's demonstrating that he's obviously not doing nothing to add value in the community, because he wouldn't have had a problem answering that question, because it's a basic question.
Hmm. Okay. So we should. So we're not out of order for having this in your way.
And how you out of order? How you out of order? You gave birth to sons to men. Look what Brother Nuri said it today, right? The woman is the second. The woman is the second self of God. After His self creation, He created the woman. We don't have the reproduction of human life without the agent of a woman.
Right, and you know, I have the chat, and those who's not those who want to be part of the chat, they can go to. Whoever was sent the link, it's a link in there, and you have to log on to Facebook to be a part of the chat. Someone in the chat, they sent it a little bit earlier. They saying that the Nation of Islam pander too much to women. They feel like they pander too much to women. What would you say? How would you respond to that?
All right. Well, I'm gonna go not even backwards. I'm gonna shift it in order to make a point, right?
Right. Okay.
For the most part, we live in a Judeo-Christian society, right? Where most people subscribe to Christ and the Bible, right?
Right.
But when you shift that, there's a whole chapter in the Holy Quran, which is, you know, traditionally the book of Muslims, you know, for the lack of a better word, there's a whole chapter dedicated to the mother of Jesus, Maryam. So if God thought enough to create a whole chapter dedicated to a woman, how is there pandering to a woman? And once again, we don't have the procreation of life without the agent of a woman, right?
Right.
And if we look at the problem in society, it's because we don't value and we disrespect the woman.
Mm.
So if we can get 75% of our energy and effort into the woman, then we fix 100% of our problem, because the woman is the first nurse and she's the first teacher.
Right.
It's almost like saying, you go to the gym too much.
Okay.
But again, it's a double mind, Angie. What we want to remember with our people, we have orientations. And unfortunately, some black men don't have a positive orientation when it comes to women because of something that they experienced with their mother. I had a brother in Whole Foods Security. He said that his relationship with his mother made it hard for him to engage black women. He ended up marrying, she's still a sister, but she's She's some part she has Asian in her blood. But mm-hmm. but so much of our opinions is based on a negative experience we had with our mom or some woman.
Okay.
Because if you logically look at it, Angie, and most of it we can dismiss it when we go right back to how can we put too much into the woman, and that's how we got here. I mean, it baffles me. It baffles me that we question investing in women, and we wouldn't even be able to articulate our thoughts if a woman didn't give birth to us.
Okay. I have another question, and I ask. It's amazing to me that I ask men, right? I'm trying to start like a little pamphlet or something, right? Because my question is, and a lot of single mothers have been asking me, right, this question: what can single mothers teach their sons about becoming a man? And we look at that reality. Some women don't have the resources of a man that's their brothers, sisters, you know, cousins. I mean, brothers and cousins, male cousins, that, or someone positive. So they're asking this question because, you know, there's a lot of gender wars going on, and they're saying that black women can't raise a man. But the reality is that, you know, what, I think 77% now, or maybe more, it's higher, that, you know, children are being raised by single mothers. So what can, until this problem is fixed, what can single mothers teach their sons about becoming a man? Like some, you know, you don't have to name a hundred of reasons, but three, four, like what would you say?
I mean, the first thing is recognizing that a woman can raise a boy up until the age of 7. Once he becomes 7, he needs a male, not a male, but a model of a man, right? And we say man, Angie and Avon, not a person that's grown physically, right? Man is mine. So he needs to be in the proximity of a man that's demonstrating their mentality, which speaks to responsibility, how he view a woman, how he views himself, and how he views his brother. So my suggestion to women is recognizing that once your son becomes 7, it's a skill shop and skill scenario now. So it can be something as simple as getting the right book in his hand that can help her raise him. You have programs that can help develop him as a boy. You have martial arts that's a tool. You have sports that's a tool. But ultimately, and I'm not saying this being biased, she has to have her son in the manhood training class at Muhammad's mosque, period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the key, Angie, is recognizing that after a certain age, there's not a lot she can do in terms of developing him into manhood. So she has to guide him and make those tools available to him. So the question on the flip side, Angie, is are those sisters willing to do that?
Okay.
And are they willing to be the best example as a mom and not have contradictions for men in their presence?
Wow. So when you say that, Brother Larry, so then how do we get that bridge, that gap between the sisters and the brothers so that they can be on the same page so that they can bring these children up properly, you know, so that they can see this balance, they can see the respect amongst the two. How can we do that? How can we do that?
Well, Avon, it starts with self-improvement, right? We have a study guide titled Self-Improvement, the basis for community development, right? So let me just use this as a caveat. You have these new developments going up. And I have a neighbor, he's saying that, you know, already the neighbors aren't taking care of the development. And that's because as individuals, we don't self-develop. So each of us became committed to being, as we hear, you know, on social media and through these coaches, the best version of ourselves. That's how it's going to come together. But Avon, Angie, we're not investing in being the best version of ourselves.
Mm.
We don't want to develop ourselves. We want things over personal development. So if I'm a developed man, how can I have a healthy relationship with a woman and I haven't come to grips with myself and my self-respect?
Right.
We're denying the responsibility of self-development. So when we come together, it's still a mess.
Mm. Yeah, so it's two people coming together that's not self-developed individually.
Exactly. So imagine that. I'm broken, you broken, we get together. But we see it every day, Angie. We see it every day.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I've been since my daughter's mom and I divorced in 2012. I've been single, not because I want to, because developing personally and equally as important. I never had the luxury of my daughter seeing me entertain women like that. What is it teaching her?
Mm. She doesn't get to see the male energy and how that works in the relationship. Wow.
Angie, Avon, she's 20. She graduated, and I'm not bragging, she graduated from the School of Columbia pre-K to 8. She went on to charter school. She's a campaign organizer for an organization that provides free legal services to young black people. So let's say your nephew gets arrested for attempted murder. He goes to court. He has a free paid lawyer. But I'm only saying that to say, is what she saw at home. And it goes back, we as men and women, we got to be better versions of ourselves. So when we meet each other, it's strength and not weakness. It's not two broken people trying to get things done.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
That's what we say all the time, right, Angie? The self-work. You got to do that self-work.
Yeah.
Larry, before I want to take some calls, but before I do, I want to tell. Can you please tell the audience about your Youth Summit 10K? Because I'm definitely going to bring my son Karan to it. So please elaborate on that.
Okay. Well, let me start. The motivation for 10K is it goes back to what we talked about earlier. So many people are talking at young people, Avon and Angie, right? So. Our logic was, my daughter and our logic was, if they're being blamed, if everyone's pointing the finger, you know, pull your pants up, don't do this, don't do that, if they're being charged with the problem, who better to hear from than the people who we're charging with the problem?
Right.
Right?
That's right.
So we said, we're going to give an event, and the panel that's on the other side of the youth in the audience, 99% younger people. Only two older people is there. One is a prominent basketball coach, and the other is Youssef Salam from the Central Park Five, because we believe not only his energy is young, but he's relevant because he's part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I'm not taking shots at anybody. Unfortunately, many of our organizations chasing losing a young man to a gunshot wound after the fact is not adding value to our neighborhood. We got to be there and give them the tools that they need before that. So the summit was designed to create a platform. We put 5 talking points on the table, and we let the youth give us their feedback. Okay, peer pressure. Is it real to you? Have you struggled with it? Does anyone you know struggle with it? How has it affected you? And we do this for 2 hours on 5 different talking points, hearing from them. The panel is only there to add their experience as younger people and then the 2 older people. But equally as important, Angie, what we're doing at the summit is we're introducing a new 501c called Airbnb. So not air as in, you know, A-I-R, H-E-I-R. The B&B stands for best and brightest. And this 501c will offer 4 levels of training, 4 semesters, 13 weeks each. The first level of training is construction technology. So we have a 30-year-old black-owned construction company coming in, and they're teaching 10.5 weeks of training, which would normally cost someone close to 10 grand, HVAC, plumbing, electrical, sheet writing. So all 20 cohorts who will attend class twice a week for 2 hours will receive their apprenticeship where they can go and get a construction job. The other 3 levels of training is conflict resolution, anger management, and socialization skills. And this is where we're losing our youth, because we can talk all day about putting guns down, pull your pants up, but until we can help them address their anger, primarily coming from seeing a generation that has for the most part left them for dead and hasn't built anything for them, and then of course solving conflicts amongst themselves, and more importantly, socialization skills outside of their vernacular. We want them to know how to go into interview and know that you shouldn't sit until the interviewer say have a seat, that you should, you know, the typical stuff, look them in the eyes, shake their hand, etc. So the summit will introduce that, which will set the stage, but also they're offering 2 collective groups. One is a fashion collective group for all the up-and-coming designers and stylists, and the other is for all up-and-coming business-minded marketers, etc. So from that, we're going to put them in 2 collective groups, and with the resources we have, issue not only stipends but grants to help them start ideas that they have. So that's the real juice of the summit, creating a collective, but the motivation is to hear from a group who we know have the answers.
Wow.
That's January 16th at the Milbank Center, which is also the Children AIDS Society, 118th and 5th, and it's for 18 to 25 year olds. So unless you come in with your child, it's not for old. It's not for adults.
So what age group? What age group?
12 to 25.
Okay. You mentioned that I know you have a graphic company, G-Star Graphic Company. Did you get that ideology to start your own business? Did the Nation of Islam help you help you think about that type of idea of opening your own business and doing for self, or that's just something that you always had in?
Well, I think, Angie, what it did was it showed and it demonstrated it's possible for us to do it the right way. Because,
okay,
you know, most of us, and just to keep it real, most of us are business inclined. We look now, you know, even our young people, they start their own little business. So that's just their nature. So coming to the Nation, you know, help you to see that you can do it the right way, and then it breaks down the importance of collective economics, you know, pooling your resources. One person may have the idea, the other person may have the connections, the other person may have the credit, and you pool it together. So the Nation was, you know, was definitely an influence, but our people have that naturally. It's just a matter of having somewhat of a playbook. and help them to see that it can be done legally. We don't have to be scammers, and we don't have to be, you know. But yeah, the nation is definitely, that was an influence on that decision.
One more question I have: how do you look at making income, talking about business, and still being a man of God? Because, you know, a lot of us have been taught that if you are making money, or if you are, you know, like, money and God don't go hand in hand. And I read Elijah Muhammad book, and I love the way, you know, a couple of his books, and I love the way he emphasized that, you know, do for self. You know, and I think that's a good concept. It's not like it's the end or be all, but it's something that we hear on earth, right? And one of the things that Nouri Muhammad said is that we are dealing with the souls, but our body is only a tool for our souls to interact with. So what would your answer be for that?
You know, it's funny, Angie. I struggle with that. Coming into the nation, I struggle with that because there were times where you do feel like, okay, you know, now I'm growing into a new being, more spiritual, godlike. So you subconsciously, you lose your edge. If you're coming from the streets being a hustler, you lose your edge. But going back to when we talked about, you know, how do we get our sons on the right track, and we talked about exposing them to certain books and training, what helped me was the more I studied, the more I learned that there's no nobility in being poor. Right? The scripture says, right, seek ye first what? The kingdom and all its righteousness and all things will be added into you. So it's saying that things is not bad, but it's the order that you put them in. So we don't look to develop ourselves and the God in ourselves. We look for things first. So we can start and make the motive self-development and being more godlike in terms of his will, wisdom, and way. The things will naturally come, and there's nothing wrong with having the things, because remember, God's promise in Genesis was, know of a surety that my seed will be a stranger in a strange land amongst a strange people, and they shall afflict them for 400 years, and then I will come, and then my people will come out of that land with what? Great substance. So God wants us to have it. But he's saying, don't deny me the source, the thing. Seek me, and I'm gonna make sure that you come into all the right people that can help you get the things you want. So to answer your question, it's mandatory. If you're serving God and you're striving to do right, being poor is an insult.
Wow. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's heavy. That's deep. All right, well, we're going to go to the lines. Because I you know what? Before we go, I know I keep saying I'm going to the phone to open up the phone line. This one thing, I know I have struggled with that. You know, you want to be the best possible version of serving God as possible, and it's just difficult because you don't want to be seen as, you know, if you have materialistic items, that you're not serving God or you're not serious about God. So it is something. But when I read Elijah Muhammad, and I just brought up a book called from Nouri Muhammad, he signs it, A Well-Made Man. I browsed through it, and he was mentioning, you know, the, like you said, the order of making money, you know, the order of your life. So it put some more, it gave me more ideas on how to think about that whole subject. So yeah, you're right. If you're not knowledgeable of how you should think about that and where it's coming from, then it could have you confused. So thank you for that thought. I'm gonna go to the phone lines now. The caller with the number, I think it's an anonymous number, is 1111. Please state your name and the city and state you're calling from. And just for all the callers that want to be, that want to have comments or questions, just please think about being courteous and respectable. So we thank you. Caller, once again, the show, our show is Black Man, How Are You Showing Up in the Community? And we have live tonight with us, Larry Muhammad. Okay, caller, with the last four digits, 111. One. Hello, caller. Name and city you're calling from? Hello? Caller, you alive? If you're calling from an anonymous number, you on now live. Okay, so we're going to put that on mute. We're going to go to caller with the last four digits, 8365. Caller with the last digits, 8365.
Yes, good evening, good evening, everyone. Good night. This is
good
Prophet
evening.
Anthony. This is Prophet Anthony from the Bronx. And peace and blessings to the hosts, Avon and Angela.
Thank you.
Blessings.
I just want to make a comment in terms of the money part. Like I told you, not only am I a prophet of, you could say Christianity in Hebrew Israelite, which that's who wrote the Old Testament. And I deal with mysticism and spirituality. But so I want to make a comment on the money part. Actually, that's not true. It's an insult if you're poor. That's absolutely not true. Not even according to the Bible, because I've read the Bible a billion times. And we live in a capitalist society. So capitalism, racism is a byproduct of capitalism, like Fred Hampton said. Our shade of red, Fred Hampton, rest in peace. That's a direct quote from Fred Hampton. So there's a lot of capitalists in this country, and capitalism in this country and the way it's run, it's evil. It's satanic. Money is not evil, but the system that the white man, the devil, the white man uses is a satanic system. And I'm against capitalists, whether they black or white. I don't care if they Nation of Islam, who they are. I'm against capitalism, exploiting people and taking unfair advantage of people's labor and making them work five times less than what they worth. And I will fight hard against a black capitalist, because that's why even Elijah Muhammad said this. He didn't mention the capitalism thing. That's why my favorite organization is the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. They fought against capitalism, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seals. So there's nothing wrong with making money, but I'm going to quote the Bible in terms of it's an insult. And I know the scripture in Genesis, the brother quote, because I know the Bible hard. Afterwards, I would judge and have come out with great substance. That is talking about now, but it says the Most High is going to do that. And number two, I'll quote the scripture where Jesus, what it says about Jesus. It says, though Jesus was rich, he became poor for our sakes when he came in the physical body. Jesus was not rich. Technically speaking, he was poor. He only used his powers sometimes for money, like when he made the fish money appear out of the fish's mouth. But Jesus technically was poor. And most of the prophets in the Bible were poor. It tells you that. Except for Abraham and King Solomon. See, a lot of these religions now teach prosperity religion. Okay? Then there's another scripture where Jesus himself and the words of Christ is in red. You speak against that, brother or sister, I don't care who it is. You're not over. Nobody's over Christ. Christ said, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. It says the poor, and it means literally physically poor and spiritually poor. Because the path to enlightenment, that's why I don't trust most of these even religions. The two do not go in, except for Buddhism. Buddhism teaches you have to denounce that. You're not going to get that. Jesus told you that. How likely is When it says go to heaven, it means reach enlightenment. You're not going to reach. I have not seen one person with money reach enlightenment. We talking about Buddhism. I'm giving a Buddhism concept. I study all religion, Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, mysticism, Rastafarianism, Hare Krishna, okay, Brahmanism. I don't just study one thing.
But let me ask
okay, you. That's why I like the Eastern religions more, but you're not going to reach enlightenment with no whole bunch of money. It's not going to happen. Show me, name me one person. Nobody can name one person. The two don't go hand in hand. In fact, Buddha was rich, and Buddha had to give up all his money and riches to go on the path of enlightenment. So I just wanted to make that comment and statement. And I'm just giving a little something that it doesn't even go into the whole deep, the deep stuff of about the materialism, like Jesus said. And I'm going to say one more quote. He said, Jesus said, when they asked him about the rich boy, this is an example. Here's an example of capitalism. Jesus speaking against capitalism. The rich boy said, I've done everything God told me to do. I kept the Ten Commandments. Jesus said, honor the poor. Not honor the poor. He told him, honor your mother and father. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. He said, all that I've done. And Jesus told him, one thing you lack, brother, because Jesus was a black man. Jesus said, go sell all your money. Go sell all your substance, and not your money, all your substance, everything you have, and give it to the poor. And you have riches in heaven. The boy couldn't do it. And then Jesus told him that the likelihood of a camel going through the eye of a needle of a rich man going into heaven. Any rich man, I don't care if you're Nation of Islam, you're a Hebrew Israelite, what religion you are. Or whether you're a regular person, so you can lie to yourself if you want. And then Jesus said, and then Peter asked Jesus, who can be saved? And Jesus said, with God, this is impossible. With man, this is impossible. With God, all things are possible. That's the exact quote, the words of Christ is in bread.
Okay. One question
so
I have.
I wanted to make that comment.
Isn't money relative? Because if somebody in one country can have $100 and it could be $1 million to them. And then someone from someplace else can have $5, and that's a lot to them. And they would say the person with $100 have a lot. So
it doesn't matter amount. Most of our people, first of all, the money people, none of y'all are making it to heaven. Are you out of your mind? These people are crazy, man. You can't see, and that's the problem. You can't have it both ways. When I'm talking about the people who put money over people and over God, anything you put over God is idolatry. Idolatry is not just getting on. See, these people, they don't tell you that. Idolatry is not just worshiping an idol. Idolatry is anything you put before God. And 99% of people, black or white, Chinese, African, majority of people put money before God. It's not even close. God is last on most people's list. That's a fact.
One question, Prophet Anthony. Somebody in the chat said, are you against Prophet Muhammad do for yourself system?
No, I'm not. I'm not against do for yourself. But do for yourself don't mean trying to be rich down here and imitate white people. Most black people want to imitate the devil, the white man. Elijah Muhammad taught the white man's the devil. So I'm not accepting the white man's system, his capitalism system. Because that's the two things we're fighting against, capitalism and racism, just like Stokely Carmichael said.
Brother Prophet, if you don't mind, Brother Prophet, Angie, if you don't mind.
Okay.
The brother says something that goes back to what we said earlier, and it really sums it up. Seek ye first the kingdom and all its righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. So this is what Prophet is saying, right? You don't put the things first. But at the same time, we don't need to dilute ourselves into thinking that we don't need an exchange in order to advance our day to day. But like Brother said, you cannot put things before you put God's will, wisdom, and way. And that's where we're losing.
And that's
we're putting
what I'm saying.
We get what you're saying, and we want to leave on that because that's That's the bottom line. But, brother, maybe I could have articulated it different, but anytime you serving God in this world, brother, and you poor, there's something wrong with that picture.
I disagree with you on that part, brother. I disagree. Because most of the prophets, when you read in the Bible, I'm going to name three of the greatest prophets in the whole entire Bible. That's Enoch, Elijah, and Jesus Christ.
Anthony, let the brother Larry respond, please.
Brother, I just want just to keep everything in context, right? I said in exchange. Rich is not the narrative. We're not talking about rich. We're talking about the reality of Con Ed, the reality of AT&T, the reality of Whole Foods. There's an exchange that make those things available to us. And it's an insult to God that we serve him that we cannot come up with the exchange necessary to feed ourselves and keep our lights on. So I got what you said, and that's right and exact. So that's the insult. For you to yield to God and can't keep your children's lights on, brother, nobody wants that type of God. That's all we're saying. What you said is perfect, but we want to keep that in perspective because we don't want to serve God and be poor, ragged, naked, and out of doors. But thank you, Brother Prophet, for your input. I appreciate it. I'm sure we, Angie and Avon, appreciate it as well. Can we take the next question?
Okay. I'm going to go to caller with the last four digits, 4171. Caller with the last four digits, 4171.
Yes, this is Brother Abdul from South Jersey, Lindenwall, New Jersey. How's everybody?
Everyone's fine.
We're good. How are you?
That's good. Good. One thing I wanted to say about the conversation we're having here. First of all, if this got to do with people's sons, if you want to bring your son into life, you have to have a male example for your son to follow. That's the first thing. And he should not be brought up in any religious order because most of them do a lot of brainwashing of children. Okay, they take kids when they're real young and try to get them accustomed to their teachings, what their program is. And that's what these kids do not need. You know, if anything they're going to learn, they learn from parents at home, not from the Muslims, the Christians, the Baptists, and everybody else. They don't need that. Okay, I came up in a household that didn't believe none of that stuff. My father was a realistic person. He said religion, no matter what it is, all fake. Written in the book, and even in the book, in the Bible, it tells you, in the Bible itself, it says the writings of many books, there is no end. So anybody can write religious scriptures and put them out there for people to believe. You bring up your kids in that, they're going to get lost. Okay? And today, in today's society, kids don't need religion. They don't need the churches. Everything has to start at home. You have to bring up your kids first before you send them somewhere else to pick up something. You got to get them on the right path. You got to do that at home. Okay? So no religious order, the Muslims or whatever, is going to help your child. Getting them in some program, that's not going to work because that's brainwashing. They brainwash people. That's what they do, all of them, last group out there.
Okay, Abdul.
Yes.
Larry, Muhammad, before you answer that, I would like to just say something because I got the extra chat. And I see B. Wise joined the chat. There's another chat going on, so I'm trying to get that extra other chat right now. So just please be along with me. The thing is that you saying brainwashed, right?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't you consider that most people are brainwashed even just by the government?
Like, well, you got to remember, you have to relate. You have no choice. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You have people who listen to the government all the time, and these same people say they are independent thinkers, okay, which we have seen, especially during COVID. People lost their jobs because they didn't want to comply with the government. And this is just something that we all could observe. So isn't one way people are getting brainwashed?
Well, the government, of course, going to try to brainwash you. I mean, that's their job. I mean, the government wants you to conform to their standards, their way of thinking, and their way of doing things. So, you know, you got to expect that.
So you're saying that a person, because you mentioned two things. You mentioned, and I'm going to make it real quick, you mentioned that parents should be the first teacher. What about the parents is
yes.
not in the right state of mind? What about this? There's a lot
of... Well, you know, well, then you have to use...
parents in the right state of mind, right?
Okay.
So the kid have a choice to be brainwashed by the government, come to a program like the Nation of Islam, like the brothers. Oh God, my mind is getting clogged.
The Hebrew Israelites,
professional organization with religion. Because remember now, no one believes in God basically now, and look what's happening. So most people, the psychologists notice, they don't have the mental capacity to rule over themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now seeing that. So just with that said, Muhammad, Larry, do you have anything else I'm sorry to say?
Well, the brother, I'm sorry, brother, if you don't mind, what's
brother
your name
Abdul.
Again?
Brother Abdul.
Well, the first thing, the one thing you're going to get from me is I'm moving in the will, wisdom, and way of God. So when you're God, you build on the best part. So I'm never getting caught up in trying to, you know, find the negative part. So brother made a good point. We said it earlier. It starts in the home. See, but brother Abdul, the problem is this. If we look in a home, that's where the problem is with some of the parents. The parents' brains, a lot of the parents' brains is soiled with worldly pursuits. So actually our children need their brains washed. But the question is, what are we going to wash their brains with? And it goes back to what we said earlier. It has to be the will, wisdom, and way of God. That's not religion. So when you go to the Holy Quran, God, Allah says that I gave you Islam as a religion, meaning it's not a religion, but I gave it to you as a religion in the name of religion. But Islam is the science of everything in life, math, science, right? Anatomy, finance, engineering. So this is what our people need. They don't need religion, you're right. They need the science of everything in life. They need military science. The black community needs to know how to build a business and how to defend the business. They need to know how to defend their woman. They need to know how to make a dollar work. We come across $1.2 trillion and we don't own pretty much nothing. So you said it right. We don't need religion. We need a way of life that's going to leverage our existence instead of making us permanent consumers. So I wanted to reiterate what you said because that's right and exact. It starts in the home, bro. But unfortunately, Brother Muhammad, a lot of the households are failing their children, bro. We see where our children is at. And if we can get into some of these homes and witness to what's going on, we really wouldn't be pleased with some of the activities of these households. And these are parents. So our children need programs. You said it best, not religion, but programs that's going to give them the tools and the skill sets for personal development.
That was well said.
Yes.
Okay. Can I respond to that?
Yes, go ahead. Wait, hold on. Somebody said, what program, besides the government program that you work for, are you involved in? Because, you know, every all our listeners will say, keep saying that you...
You mean me personally?
Yes, they said besides the government...
Well, you know, I try... Well, I go speaking and counseling kids in high school, junior high school, and in elementary school to try to push them to gear their minds toward technology, because that is the only future that's going to exist for them. All these jobs you have out here now is on its way out, everything. Only jobs going to be out there is technology jobs. They got the system designed for it. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, as far as the kids are concerned, there's a program that the government has issued years ago that's in effect today. It's called, look it up, MK Ultra. It's a mind control program that has everybody off the chain today. That's why these kids are killing people all over the country. Did you hear about the six-year-old kid that went and shot his teacher in school?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he got pissed off at the teacher. He brings a gun to school the next day and shoots the teacher. Didn't kill him, but tried to kill him. Shoots the teacher, you know, because that's the mindset. That's the program that the government has put in place years ago, and it's all in effect today, and it's working. They're using satellites to beam this energy down here that's affecting certain people. It doesn't affect everyone, but affects a majority of people. They're making it unsafe everywhere you go now, because their main goal is to declare martial law in this country. That's what the government is behind the whole thing. And you know what? They don't care who knows it, because they know you can't do nothing to stop it. They have the military in place to march into the cities when this is put into place, when that time comes. When that is, I don't know. Nobody knows. But that's their plan. Kids today need parents to teach them first, always. Now, if the household got drug addicts and alcoholics, then those parents can't teach kids nothing. That's just a negative right there.
Also, don't even have morals.
Well, you know,
a lot of households don't even have basic morals.
So that's true. Then the kids can't learn.
Then if you don't have morals, and that's the whole concept of believing in God, the higher power. And some people do need, I would say some people still need religion. Some people, most people are not leaders. Most people need to be told what to do. And what's going on today in society is a perfect example of how people are out of control right now. Because the government is saying, okay, and Mike, one of the things you did say is that people, the government is setting people up so they could, enforce
martial law.
And this is how they're going to do it, because people complaining, oh, the government did, they taking away our rights, they want us to do this, and they want to, but we want to live the way we want to live, right? So the government is saying, okay, live the way you want, let's see how this works out. And you know what's going on now? People are saying that they more interested in their sexuality. They push in homosexuality, every other sexuality on the children in your favorite place in school, Abdul, because you know you love school, right? School is a porn site, just a porn place, okay, where they teach children, okay? This is a sex pool of children to go to. They teaching that more so than math, reading and writing, okay? And not only that, now you have organizations that is advocating to molest your child, and it be legal, okay? And we're not talking about the groups of people that is advocating to sleep with children as young as 5 or 6 years old with the so-called child permission. We're not talking about taking children and cutting off their
genitals
so they can, you know, live out how they field. Okay, so the government is watching what's going on, so they can say, okay, we gave you guys enough, and y'all getting out of hand now. Because most people, if you give them too much freedom, they will sabotage themselves. And that's how the government is going to come in. So it's really not the government. It goes back to what Larry, Avon, and I was speaking about. It's the self. It's what you have. They want to do that. Most people want to do bad. They want to do this. So that's how the government is going to be able to enforce these laws against the citizens. Because the citizens is not living right to begin with. And they don't have those principles and values.
Okay, Andrew, I want to add on to what you said. Hold on, Abdul. I want to build on what Angela was saying there. Now, going by your premise, you're saying that the government has the program MKUltra. I've heard of it, yes, and going on. So the government is an oppressor. An oppressor is not going to take their foot off your neck. You cannot ask them, okay, you know, be kind and, you know, don't do that to us. They're not going to do it. So they do, yes, they're trying to grab a hold of the minds. All right, so then guess what's going to happen? Who's going to take their minds back? They're not going to do it. You can't ask them. They're not going to do it. So who's going to do it? We have to do it. And that's what that training is going to have to come from us. And it's going to have to come from a community because like Angela was saying and then like Brother Larry was saying, we have homes that cannot function. They're dysfunctional, so they can't train these children. The other thing is the parent is not there. The parent is not in the home, so the kids are left to raise themselves or with other kids, and they're raising each other. So who is going to do it? So it's going to have to come from outside. It's going to have to come from the community. Those that are there and that's of sound mind, they got to step forward and to help out here. That's how it's going to be because it ain't going to come from your government. So that's it. And I refuse to sit here and give up and say, oh, all is lost and then there's no hope for us. You know, that's it for the kids and, you know, just tuck our tails between our legs and go on about our business. That ain't going to work. So there has to be a system in place. There's something that you got to know and believe and understand to help you go forward. Because if you don't realize that and understand that, you will never get anywhere, and you're absolutely right. We may as well give it up, but we don't need to give it up. So that's all I have to say. Brother Larry, Angela, you want to say
Brother Larry,
else?
If he have, we can take another caller. Brother Larry, do you have anything?
No. I appreciate you, Brother Abdul.
Okay, can I make one comment?
Yes.
Okay, you know, when I was a kid coming up, the whole neighborhood was your parents, everybody. Every adult in that neighborhood will smack you, knock you down, or whoop your ass and send you home to your parents if they caught you doing something. See, that kind of mentality don't exist anymore. These kids are difficult to reach because they come up in a violent time and violent society. If you put your hands on one of these kids will kill you straight out. Okay,
well,
because
you know what? Well, we thank God for people like Larry Muhammad, who was not afraid of children. Like he explained earlier that he was on the.
Oh, I'm not saying be afraid of them. I'm just use common sense.
Can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead.
And he was on the elevator with a child, with a young adult who had a gun, and he spoke to them to actually bring consciousness to him. So it's the adults that these children are out of order. And Nori Muhammad mentioned that. So we can't blame these children came from us. You understand? We all are responsible. So and people like Larry Muhammad and others that we had on the show and that we will have on the show, they're stepping up and saying we're gonna do this part. Not that they can save the whole community, but they saying, you know what, we're gonna take responsibility and we're doing this. So we need people. It's a group effort. And then there's some people who don't believe that the black that the black race could be saved. And that's okay, too. They have their own little, you know, corner, and they just believe what they believe. But then there's some of us who believe that, you know, all hope is not lost. So thank you for your comment, and thank you for your continuous support.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Abdul.
Okay.
All right, brother, brother Larry.
Angie, it's percolating tonight, huh?
It's always. And this is good because we're having conversations, you know, to get an idea how
exactly.
You know, into each other's mind and where we get our ideologies from, and you know, just to get a feel of the climate.
I think it's fun,
and I think it's definitely good. So I'm gonna announce one more time, and I'm gonna announce the show. Tonight's show is Black Men, How Are You Showing Up in the Community series. This is a series that. Avon, you said through the manosphere, but I totally little bit disagree. We just came up with that because, you know, a lot of men was coming to us asking us questions, you know, and asking us for help and support and what they're doing. So we just put this together for, you know, numerous reasons, and it became a series. So every other once a month, we plan to have this series, and maybe in the future more. And we want people, black men, to actually participate so we can know others can know what black men are doing, because we always hearing what black men ain't doing. So we need to know, the people need to know, the community need to know that there are black men out here that's trying to make a difference. Okay, so I'm gonna go to the next caller. Caller with the that's anonymous again. The last 4 digits, 1111. Caller, please give us your name and the city and state you were born in. Hello, caller. Hello, caller. Okay. All right. So I guess that caller is shy. All right. So Larry. I just have the other caller still on, but I still have people asking questions. So let me ask you one thing, Larry. I wanted to ask you, what would you say that the most contradictions that the most misconception about the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, you would think?
I don't really think, Angie, I don't think there's misconceptions. I think the issue is, and we do it amongst each other, right? We have people who met us through other people, right? You know, there's people don't know us, but they had a conversation with someone who had something to say about us, right?
Right.
And that's how they view us. So it's not even misconceptions. If people are meeting Minister Farrakhan through the media or middle people, then they'll never know him. So the challenge is, and again, invest an hour or two and hear what the man has to say yourself, because this is the one thing that nobody can call him. And I'm not saying it because I recognize who he is. They can call him an anti-Semite. They can call him he hates white folk. But no one's never called him a liar. So think about that. No one's never said, oh, you a liar. So people aren't always going to agree, but we always have to get to know not just the minister himself, but we got to learn how to get to know each other. Because we're letting middle people make enemies for us instead of just getting to know a person ourselves.
I agree. I'm going to get ready to heat it up a little bit. We only got a little bit of time. We got like another 15 minutes, right, Avon? But I would like to take this 15 minutes, Avon, with your permission, to ask Brother Larry Muhammad about a comment on one of his posts. And he made this comment, and he had 210 people like it with 63 comments with 80 shares.
Wow.
Before I ask that, do you have any other questions for him?
I have no other questions. I want to hear about this comment. But you know what? Before we go into that, I want Larry to tell everybody about his event again, where we can get in contact with him. So should we run out of time, that's out there. So, Larry, you want to tell us about your event again, when and where?
Yeah, the event is Youth Summit 10K, because the goal is we're organizing 10,000 youth. It's Martin Luther King Day. That's January 16th at the Children Aid Society Mill Bank at 118th. Off of Lenox Avenue in Harlem, you can take the 2 or the 3 to 116th and walk two blocks north, and it's right off the corner, and it's giving our youth an opportunity to articulate their thoughts and opinions and offer solutions to five key talking points. So that's January 16th from 1 to 3 at Mill Bank Children Aid Society in Harlem at 118th off of Lenox, 2 of the 3 train to 116th, walk two blocks to 118th.
And how can we get in touch with you, Larry? How can people get in touch with you to follow you?
To give them direct access, they can email me at gstargnyc07@gmail.com. gstargnyc07@gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you for that. I just want to get someone back on the phone just to see if he has any other, Prophet Anthony, just to see if he has any other questions or comments. Hold on, let me just get him back on. Hi, Prophet Anthony. Do you have any, before I go ask, speak about anything else?
I just wanted to say one thing, peace and blessings, is in terms of working, the Bible tells you to work. So, I mean, I would think that's common sense. The Bible says if you don't work, you don't eat. So the Most High is not the Most High, because that's disrespecting the Creator. The Most High does not tell you you don't work, brother or sister. So we know that you have to pay your bills. So I'm listening to Christ. I'm not listening. No man on this planet Earth living is over Jesus Christ, just like the scripture says. So anybody who listens to a man over Christ, you definitely ain't making it. And whatever God you're dealing with, I'm not dealing with that. Okay. Christ said that Christ, the Most High, knows you need to pay your bills, your rent, your Con Edison bill. The Most High know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So people who serve in God the right way, that means you live in a righteous life. You keeping all the laws that the Most High has in the scriptures, in the Torah. So if you keeping those laws, the Most High is going to allow you to be able to pay your bills and all that. That means you walking on faith and all the other principles and virtues that teach us in the scriptures. Okay, so that you would think that would be common sense. I'm talking about capitalism and greed and exploiting people. Because that's why even Elijah Muhammad said, because I've read most of his books, he tells you in there, black people's not ready to take over. If they take over now, it would be a wicked kingdom, because black people are wicked and greedy for money. Meaning, I'm telling me, any brother telling me that, you would kill me, brother, for money, for no reason, just for money. Not because I owe you money over money. That's what most of the black leaders are doing now, selling the community out for money. That's one of the main problems.
Anthony, I just think that in terms of what Larry was saying, he was just saying everything comes in from a perspective. That's what he was saying.
No, I get all that. Yeah, I'm not stupid. I'm a very intelligent man that has read over 1,000 books, so I'm very intelligent. I get all that.
Right.
I understand that we got to pay our bills, and so I'm not advocating that. I just wanted to say that, clarify that for the record. I'm not advocating. We got to pay our bills. So you work. The Most High tells you if you don't work, you don't eat.
Right. What do you
think? He tells you that in Genesis, by the sweat of your brow, that was one of the curses working. That's what the curse he put on Adam. By the sweat of your brow, you shall eat. So we know that. Hebrew Israelites, we know that.
Real quick, what do you think about the youth program that he has put together, the summit?
Oh, that's excellent. Any type of good, I'm for it. Any type of any, I support all of the groups, not just one group, all of them, because all the groups want you to all follow them. But I like all the groups. The Moore Science Temple of America, which is the first black organization over here before the Nation of Islam, but they don't get no credit with no Prophet Noble Drew Ali. All right, the Moors, the Black Panthers, because they still around, the Garveyite followers, all the organization, the Kemet people, the Afrocentric brothers, Dr. Ben, all John, all the organizations I support. The Nation of Islam, I support any positive thing they do. I commend them. They inspired me, the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X specifically, more so, him and the Messenger, and Khalid Muhammad. Those are my three favorite. I'm not really, you know, so crazy about Farrakhan, but he's a great man. He's running an organization. He's done a lot of good in the community. I'm just saying, that's my own personal preferences. Okay. Now, you know, do I agree with the Nation of Islam theologically on everything? Absolutely not. But okay. Do I support the good they do in the community, getting brothers off drugs? I know their track record. I know about the Nation of Islam. Getting brothers off drugs, cleaning up the community, fighting some of the Nation of Islam because four drug dealers got rid of them. The list goes on and on. The goods. I support all of that because I'd rather a brother join the Nation of Islam than be out here on the street selling drugs and killing people and harming our women. So I support that aspect. I'm about good. Good versus evil. I'm not for evil. I don't care what organization or who it comes from. Nobody gets a pass, not me, not anybody else. So I support good. That's great they're helping the kids. The Nation of Islam has been doing that. Mm-hmm. In fact, as far as this part, I give them credit because they did it, not because I'm saying it, because they did it. They have cleaned up more people than any organization, the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. Okay? So there's no doubt about it. Okay. Actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
So any type of good, I'm for that.
Okay.
Now, you heard what I just said. I just gave them credit. They've done it. So so that's what I think about them helping the children, the young people out. They need it. Of course, the Nation of Islam is my favorite kids because they have a militant part of their organization, the FOI, the Fruit of Islam.
Okay.
So I'm very aware. I study all the organizations, every single one of them.
All right. Well, thank you for your comment, Prophet Anthony, and thank you for your support.
All right. Peace and blessings.
All right. Peace,
peace
and blessings.
And blessings.
All right. I see BY Serpents in there, and they go on. It's a lot of stuff they have. So BY Serpents, I see you in the chat. I realize you there. I know we're running out of time, but BY said reading 1,000 books is not proof of intellect. And then they mentioned the term Moors is derived from the old Greek term Moors, M-O-R-O-S. So morals implies dumb, stupid, foolish, mentally inert. Okay.
Inept.
I don't have my glasses. I'm trying to read as much. Okay, here it is now. Okay, yeah. All right. So I'm sorry I'm not able to. Something, my chat got stacked. I'm stuck. So I apologize about that. So, Larry, the couple of minutes that we have, I have to mention this. You said that I wish that we would have got into it earlier because, boy, you would have really seen how our listeners handle this one. You said, oh, yeah, black women do submit to their man. You gotta be a man, bro. No.
Oh.
Wow. You got.
But you know what, Angie? It's like once someone's my Facebook friend, they notice when I want to bring attention to certain words, I'll either cap them, or if I in this case, I put the semi quotations under men the first time, right? So I wanted to go there because that's a really hot talking point, right? Because women, for the most part, has an issue, I think, with the words. And then men have this.
Larry, we can't hear you.
Think a woman should submit to them because they're you're a man, a male, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my point, My point was, if a man is demonstrating the responsibility that come with being a man, a true woman is not going to have a problem. When I say submitting, meaning reciprocating what she's supposed to reciprocate as a woman, right? Giving you comfort, right? Consoling you, right? Making sure you got a decent meal in your belly. That's if you didn't get home 2 hours first and you're waiting for her to come home and cook when you can do it for yourself. So I really wanted to trigger. I wanted to trigger sisters and men. But it really was to support the women, because men think a woman should yield to them just because they're men. And that's not my position.
Okay,
how did you interpret it though?
I want to read out some of the comments. It says, Elena Jackson, she said, why are y'all so focused on women submitting? Does that boost some men's self-esteem and ego? And then some people were saying, come on, somebody, that part, facts, they was going, I'm glad you said this. You got to know the difference between masculinity and overly aggressiveness. So they was going, a lot of people, let me put my glasses. Yeah, definitely got to be that ninja. It comes naturally. So when I seen, I thought it was funny because I knew it was going to spark. But when I went there, it wasn't that many comments. And when I went back, I was like, wow, okay. I don't look at submission. We spoke about that a while back on the show, and we're going to come back to that one day. I don't look at submission as a bad thing. I listen to a man that I trust and that he has exhibit leadership qualities and that he knows what he's doing. He showed me that he knows how to handle situations, and that if he instructs me to do something, I can do it because I know he knows what he's doing. He has proof of it. He's showed responsibility. And I trust him, not because he's just a man, because I trust him. If my man tell me to jump over a bridge, I'm jumping. So people say, oh, you're a jump? Yeah, because whatever's on the bridge is more dangerous for me to stay on the bridge. So it'd be more safe for me to jump. That's how I trust. You understand? But if you don't have that type of man, then of course that's going to be a problem. So when you hear sisters go, oh, no, I'm not submitting, maybe it's because they don't trust a man. So when I see stuff like, when I see comments like that, I don't get offended. So it was just funny because I knew you were going to get a lot of comments. And by me speaking to a lot of women and women talking to me, I know a lot of women, they don't trust their men. And that's a reflection on their part, too, because we're in 2023 now. You don't have to be with someone, So, yeah, I thought that was just I thought that was a hot topic.
you know, what's funny, when I said it, I didn't expect it to get that type of response. I really wanted to, again, I wanted to it was my way of supporting women, but also showing them how, like, they have a responsibility in it. Because, see,
absolutely,
I keep it real with you. I've met females where, I've demonstrated, like, I'm responsible. If I notice you need something, I'm going to give it to you. You don't have to ask me. And Anthony, they didn't respond well.
Oh.
Because I understand that if it's something that they're not used to, it sounds kind of weird. People get afraid when they come into something that they're not accustomed to. It's almost like, is this a trick? It's too good to be true. So if you want a good man, sis, when he demonstrate manhood, you should yield to him. Brother, if you want a woman to yield to you, you got to demonstrate manhood. Now, that was the energy behind the post.
Right, right. And you got to realize a lot of women don't know what a good man, a decent man, and it's relative, though, right? Some women need a man to basically help them get through difficult situations or, play a more leadership in their life. A lot of women was raised by their fathers or strong men in their life. So they don't know how that looks.
Right, right.
So And then you have others who were raised with either their fathers or men, and they know how that looks. So they appreciate, and they just trust men. You know, if you don't, you're not trusting a man, then there's, you know, that's a reflection of the woman as well. Just, you know, in terms of the woman part of it. So, you know, that comes with trust, you know, and that comes with knowing yourself and knowing what a man should look like in your life.
No, that's a good point.
So, yeah,
that summed it up. Well, I'm going to tell you this. You guys definitely, I'm keeping it real with you. Definitely should create a physical forum where we can get men in and women in and have this same exchange. A really good host to keep, you know, to keep the people who, you know, want to give us 2 hours of commentary, you know, keep the timeline in check. But this is a really great platform that should be offered, you know, as we go in a physical space, because the talking points come out of the original question to black men. But I definitely appreciate it.
All right. Well, are you saying that we not good hosts? You say we need a host.
Meaning where you guys can fall back, right?
Uh-huh.
And engage as panelists more than just trying to spend time being like the deputy, so to speak.
Oh, mention that again. That's interesting, real quick.
Like, for example, like right now, like I noticed tonight you guys were, you know, were sharing commentary, and you also had to deputize some of the questions, or more the comments. But okay. I think in a physical space, as one of the key panelists, it really gives you an opportunity to offer, because you got a lot to offer in terms of, like, what you just said with the women. That perspective, that's valuable. And coming from another woman, women need to hear from other women. You know, like men need to hear from other men. We got to hold each other accountable. Sisters, you know, want to hold and encourage each other, hold each other accountable and encourage each other. So I think as panelists, we can get the best of you. We all don't have to spend a lot of that time being the sheriff and keeping people on the timeline, et cetera, et cetera.
I agree. That's in
a physical space. For sure, it works for the show. I'm just saying I'm in full support of down the road doing something in a physical space.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay.
I can see that.
Thank you for your input. Larry, we appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for accepting the invitation. And thank you for your support. Avon, you have the last closing statement?
No, I agree with you 100%. Much gratitude and appreciation, Brother Larry. Thank you for accepting our invitation. Thank you so much.
And you know what? For the record, this is the first time I've said I would never do something like this, because it's, you know, it's kind of like new for me. But I'm glad I accepted. It was nice.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that.
Avon, I'll keep a line with you guys off the on the back channel in reference to what we talked about getting brother on the show. So just expect my texts and emails.
We most certainly will. Again, thank you so much, Brother Larry, for showing up and having this conversation with us tonight. And our listeners, remember to support Brother Larry Muhammad and his event on the 16th. And he gave you the information. So with that, we're going to say good night. And we hope that you continue to go along with us. We appreciate it. Angela, anything you want to say? Last thought?
You said it well. Once again, it's on January, let me put my glasses, January 16th at
118th. 1-3, yes.
Right. Okay. 118th Street, right? Fifth Avenue on Fifth?
Off of Lenox Avenue.
Okay. Off of Lenox Avenue, Children's Aid Society. So please bring your children, your cousins, your nephews, nieces, and show up. So we thank you. Good night.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
All right.
Appreciate you back.
And to all our callers and listeners and contributors, thank you so much. Good night.
And we'll see you again. We'll hear from you again.